Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Friday Night SmackDown on Fox.
Well, Alex, big developments on a couple of fronts. We will coin flip start with the results of the world title tournament so far. We have AJ Styles advancing to face Seth Rollins at Night of Champions. What did you think going into tonight? Who was your pick to come out of the two three-way matches and the semifinals?
Well, I was honestly hoping for Austin Theory. More on that in a minute, but I thought Edge was logical, and then I kind of got talked into that more from some of your shows this week and just hearing what other people thought. So when AJ won the first one, I kind of took that to mean it might be him. I kind of figured it would be whoever won the first one, considering you had like the three quote-unquote legacy stars in there. So I kind of figured it would be him. I'm excited with the result, though, because, and correct me if I'm wrong, I only remember one pay-per-view PLE match between AJ and Rollins previously, which is crazy because they've both been in the company for 7 or 8 years at this point. So what I remember of it, it was really good. So I'm excited we're going to see it again, and it doesn't feel... It doesn't feel like it's tired. Like if Lashley had won, like we just saw a whole thing with Seth and Lashley on Raw, and it just would have felt tired. So this feels at least a little bit fresh.
Yeah, I think so too. Did you hear any explanation about what happens if a SmackDown wrestler wins a title that was created to give Raw a world title? Did they overtly address that tonight?
No, and I'm glad you asked that because I brought that up in my report too, that I don't understand why they never mentioned like what happens. Logically, I assume that what would happen is that wrestler would go over there and then when they lose the title, they would revert back, right? Kind of like...
Yeah, that's what I'm assuming. But it would have been nice to say that so it seemed more... My point in asking that question is not to divert from kind of the main subject, but... I wish they had said, and fans of Styles, or they don't call them fans, but, you know, if Styles wins, then there will be a trade, or there will be, that he will be automatically switched to the other brand. Like, address it, because the one thing that takes away from takes a significant chunk of excitement away from this is it just seems like everyone is safely going to assume Seth is going to win. And maybe I'm wrong, but I think that's what fans are going to think, because he's Raw-based, and this is a Raw-based title. And had they bother to address it with some sort of explanation that's like, oh, that's the plan, huh? Now I can imagine Styles winning. And they didn't bother to do it, so it sort of feels like they're just hoping people don't think about it or acting like, well, y'all know who's going to win. We're not going to pretend that there's another – we're not even going to pretend Styles might win.
And that's the thing, and that was kind of what I was hoping for with Theory, is I was really, really hoping that all of this was a part of some weird master plan – that they drafted Theory to SmackDown because they had to keep up the appearances with the United States title thing. And then he was going to lose it at Backlash and then win this tournament and go back to Raw. And that way they could kind of have their cake and eat it too and kind of move everything back and forth, right? Like, I thought that was a good idea if they were insisting on doing the SmackDown thing. Mm-hmm. And I kind of thought that might be the direction they're heading. And then before we found out the participants, the other thing I thought of was, well, this would be really interesting if it's a way to get like Solo or Jay in the tournament and they win and they go over to Raw and they're champion for a little bit. And then when they lose, they have to go back and face Reigns after being away from him for, I don't know, 90 days or whatever, right? Like the two opportunities they had to where I could have like, talked myself into, okay, I can get over this. It makes sense now because it's going somewhere. Mm-hmm. They didn't they didn't do any of that. All they did was they just had AJ win, which is fine. You know, it is what it is. The match will be good. But there's next to no intrigue now because of the fact of if AJ wins the title, then he's going to be on Raw for a month and then lose and then nothing, or he's just on Raw again and it's like the last 2 weeks was a fever dream. Like, it just, you're right. Them not bringing it up makes it glaring on top of the fact that they had opportunities to make it make sense and they chose not to.
Yeah, this is as conventional as it gets, with the one caveat being that AJ and Seth does not feel like a match that's been burned out. I'm looking at Cage Match, and they've only had four singles matches in WWE and one match back in 2006 on the indie scene when Seth was Tyler Black. They fought twice in 2022 and twice in 2019, multiple times in multiple man matches, but, you know, tag matches and triple threats. But it feels fresh. But, yeah, I don't know. I mean, and I know we've got a couple of weeks for them to build it up, and AJ's going to be on the Grayson Effect, the debut of Grayson Waller's talk show next week, kind of, you know, get us going. I think frame the match in a way where you see AJ's emotionally invested in it, and he makes his case why we should believe in him. So there is time for it, but I'm looking forward to the match, obviously. I mean, I want these two having a high-profile match together on a pay-per-view is great. I mean, I'm not complaining about that. I just want a little more suspense more effort or layering put into making this make sense. And part of it is just, you know, I'm a stickler for logic and explanation. You know, it's the things about the draft bother me when they don't explain, you know, what the factions being drafted all together and versus singles wrestlers and whatever. There's all kinds of things that about the draft in each year, they come up with, you know, new ways to wing it in ways without explanation that leave you scratching your head. And this is sort of one of those too. I mean, I know they just wanted to fill TV time and have more roster or star power in the tournament to make it more prestigious. So thus utilizing six top SmackDown wrestlers helps, but why not just address it with the very simple explanation that if a SmackDown wrestler wins, then there will be an equitable trade made for a Raw wrestler who will go to SmackDown in place of Styles, or Styles will move to Raw. When he loses a title, he'll revert to SmackDown if it happens in the next year. I mean, they could have just said that, and I like that kind of thing. I think the audience craves that kind of explanation, and I was hoping for it earlier in the week, and I thought, you know, almost for sure we'd get it tonight. And that's why I asked you, because I'm like, maybe I, you know, zoned out during some brief explanation or something.
No, and you're right. The ambiguity is the biggest problem. And, you know, you bring up that part of the reason they did this was a star power deal, and I think that that's a flimsy excuse for them.
Yeah.
Because of the simple fact that if you look at, had they just done this on Raw, they easily, just off the top of my head, Lesnar wasn't involved in this, Omos wasn't involved in this. You have some lower level guys like Johnny Gargano, or, I mean, even Dominic. Like, you could have filled this out with people who you could talk yourself into making a case for. Hell, you could even throw Sammy and KO in there. Like, they easily could have found 12 people on the Raw roster. Like, that's a terrible excuse. The TV time thing is fine, and I get that. But that actually leads me to, do you think they kind of wasted this by doing all of it in a week? Like, don't you think they could have got more mileage out of this?
The short answer is yes, they could have. And the only caveat that might explain it is they wanted a couple weeks to let Styles and Seth, or whoever won, but Styles and Seth in this case, cut promos and build up the match. And they didn't think that stretching out the tournament would give them that window to actually build up whatever the result was, especially if it's not a feud with sort of a baked in backstory, which this doesn't have. So if they just said, you know what, Seth and AJ, they're credible wrestlers, they're gonna have a really good match at Night of Champions, but we need to give them some mic time, so let's get through this quickly this week. That's my best guess at why they did it quickly, because a more traditional drawn out tournament would have allowed fans to speculate for, you know, a couple weeks about it. And I think people. I know people like tournaments, and they like to imagine what will happen next. And instead, they, you know, it did feel rushed the way that they did it.
Yeah, it was. You're definitely right. It was a circumstance of the calendar with these shows being, I don't know, 3 weeks apart or whatever it ended up being. And it felt like they had to do this all, you know, in a week. It's just, if they were going to do it in a week, I would have preferred they just did this at the actual show. Like, did the two triple threats and then the finals at the actual show if you were going to make it so fast. Like, to me, that would have been better.
Yeah, yeah, and I'm looking at the Raw roster. I mean, I when you mentioned, you know, well, it could have been Lesnar or Omos. I mean, obviously they don't have to be involved in the finish of a triple threat match. And Lesnar's immersed in a feud with Cody, so I can understand them not putting him in there because they don't want him on the losing end of a match, even if he's not involved in the finish. But they could have had him in a triple threat match, and heck, they could have booked it in a way where Lesnar costs Cody and Cody costs Lesnar. They could cost each other. The match in separate triple threat matches. I mean, if they had to, they could have pulled that off. But there is a pretty big drop-off. I mean, yes, you could throw, you know, Johnny Gargano, introduce Odyssey Jones and Riddick Moss in one of the triple threat matches, and then have, Otis and Braun. Or was Otis in one of the triple threat matches?
No, but you could have taken the opportunity. Like, they put Priest in there, and they made Priest look good, and he didn't do the job, and that was great. But if it's more matches, you could use some of the opportunity to make somebody like Priest or Bronson Reed, or, like, it feels like doing it this way, you're right, they got the benefit of the quote-unquote star power, but they didn't elevate anybody with this the way that they could have, and that's kind of where part of my problem with involving SmackDown in it is, because now you have a situation where, okay, Seth's going to be champion on Raw, but they didn't elevate anybody. So who's he going to defend the thing against?
Yeah. And I mean, I think they would have had to spread out the star power if they didn't have to do triple threat matches. First of all, they could have just done one-on-one brackets and spread it out too. But whatever. I mean, we got what we got. And now we got incest, and this comes across as we just want to get through this tournament. Like, we're not super excited about it. I mean, that's what this comes across as, and we're going to give you a good match, and everyone knows or thinks they know it's going to be Seth. Let's put him against someone who people can imagine winning, and I think people can imagine Styles winning. I do think the majority of WWE viewers, taking into account the whole casual audience of 2 million plus who watch SmackDown on Fox, and then the rest who are watching clips and internationally and peripherally, do you think most of them are thinking, well, of course it's going to be Seth because he's Raw-based and Styles just got drafted to SmackDown? I don't know. You know, like, I mean, I know that there's some fans who don't think about it the way we do, and they're still thinking there's people who have a list of 15 people they think can win the Royal Rumble each year when it's usually narrowed down to one or two, you know, if you understand the booking scheme. So I guess there's some who might think that, but I think the majority are just like, all right, it's Seth's title. It's just a matter of getting there.
I would tend to agree. I would say it's probably 70%. I don't think that a lot of the casual viewers pay one bit of attention to the Raw SmackDown thing. I think it's more how they've been booked. Like, I've always been a big fan of AJ Styles. Like, I remember watching him on, you know, NWA Wildside when that was on TV down here, you know, 20-something years ago. But the thing is that he's been gone for a while. He just came back. Seth is basically in the middle of another push, whatever you want to call this version of him and what's going on. But I don't think – I think that lends itself to it as well. I would tend to agree with you, though. Probably 70 to 75% of people make the assumption Seth is going to win.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, well, we can talk more about the tournament, and I also want to talk about the big development regarding the tag team title situation, the return of Roman Reigns for the first time since WrestleMania, also Asuka turning heel on Bianca Belair, interrupting her celebration. Good thing she did, because there wouldn't have been time for the main event if Bianca gave a long speech, but that's a whole other issue in terms of formatting. So let's pause formally, introduce the show. And then we'll bring in some callers. We're going to have Javier Machado on for a roundtable segment to discuss the happenings on tonight's show and more. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Friday, May 12th, 2023. And I'm Wade Keller, the host of the show, the editor, publisher, and founder of Pro Wrestling Torch. It started as and continues to be a weekly newsletter.
And also, I oversee, edit, and contribute to our main website, pwtorch.com, including my live TV coverage of Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And then I'm also part of some VIP podcasts throughout the week also, and the host of the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, which yesterday featured Todd Martin for a look at some big happenings in AEW with their new TV deal to be announced next week, with some warnings from some words of caution from Todd on expanding television, and some discussion points about who the announcer should be, and a variety of talking points coming out of that story. That's the lead story that we talked about for 15, 20 minutes at the top of yesterday's flagship. So if you have not listened to that yet, check it out. We also talk a lot of WWE 2, of course. And if you aren't subscribed to that yet, just search Wade Keller in your podcast app. And when a blue logo pops up, subscribe to that. That's our main regular podcast. And then the red logo features our feed of our post shows that we do live every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday after Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown. And then also some flashback shows on that feed also throughout the week. The other voice you hear so far on the show is Alex McDonald. He is a contributor to PWTorch.com. He covers SmackDown with his reports alongside mine every Friday night. So you get two perspectives with different details and different reactions and analysis to the show as it progresses. So hope everybody out there is checking out my reports and his reports every Friday. Alex, welcome back to the post show.
Thank you, Wade. And, you know, you brought up Todd, so I have to ask.
Yeah.
With the new AEW show on Saturday, is the fix going to be like 7 hours now?
Oh, God. Yeah, we do have to kind of address that, don't we? I'm a little bit in denial about what this is going to do to the whole schedule and the rhythm that's been in place for a few years now. I felt that way when Dynamite started, too. And when NXT went primetime in USA, it was like, you get in a routine and then these crazy expansions of programming messes things up. But yeah, I didn't even thought about the length of the fix. We're going to have to curtail something in order to keep things from getting even more out of hand.
My vote is Rampage.
Oh, I think almost for sure. Yeah. But the thing is Rampage is pretty quick, you know, and that's a pretty quick rundown. A 2-hour additional primetime show that's going to be portrayed as equal, if not bigger than Dynamite out of the gate. That's going to demand a good amount of analysis early on. So I don't know, maybe Fox will cancel SmackDown and then it'll all work out.
Yeah, I hope not.
That's not going to happen. That's the number one show.
Yeah, they can cancel Raw. I'm fine with that.
Yeah. Can we skip Rampage and then be greeted by news that Raw's cut to 2 hours? So we just get a tighter show on Mondays, and a lot of people who skip it will go back to watching it because it's not as much of a time commitment.
Yeah, that would be much better.
That'd be my vote, yeah. All right, well, let's give out the phone number here and the email, because if you're live streaming the show, thank you, and we welcome you to join the conversation. You can call us right now, 347-215-8558. If you call and want to be on the show, push 1 on your keypad. That will flag you on the switchboard, and that tells us you want to be on the show. You can also call that number, just listen in, if that's easier for you than streaming it over the internet, which you can do at wadekellerpostshow.com. I include a link to the live streams after Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday on pwtorch.com at the top and bottom of my report. So you can click that and get a direct link to our live stream for that evening, which we start roughly 5 minutes after the show's end. The other option is just go to Twitter at pwtorch, and I almost always put up a link to the live stream there also. What else was I going to add? Oh, our email, wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. If you want to give your thoughts or ask a question on tonight's episode, you do not need to listen to the live stream to participate. If you've got things to do after Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown end, you can send us an email with your thoughts and then listen back later to see if your email made it onto the show. All right, let's speaking of callers, begin the caller portion of the show. We're going to bring Kyle on early here. Kyle from Baltimore, welcome. I haven't heard from you in a while on the show. We haven't gotten to your call. What is on your mind about SmackDown tonight?
I've been, this entire tournament. I think I want to start with, I wanted to start with Roman Reigns and him and Solo's going after the tag team championship champs after him already the Universal and WWE champion. I don't understand why they even announced this. I'm confused. I'm I was confused about that. And then another thing about about Alba Fire and Alex are still NXT Women's Tag Team Champions. So don't know why they're still holding those belts, but whatever. But those two really confused me. But really, that's like, why is this even happening? Why? I just don't understand why he's still a double champion and going after tag team gold and then having it's everything about that is so confusing. So what do you think about that, and where do you think they're going with this entire situation?
Yeah, another thing I would like explained is why, you know, there was a reference to Sheamus being a previous world champion, and it was almost like they were saying, yeah, Sheamus was fighting for this world title. He held this title before. And it, you know, largely shares the same name, World Heavyweight title. And they talked about his quick victory back in the day, not mentioning who he beat, by the way. And so I don't know if they're trying to, like, kind of halfway say this title is matched to that lineage, but what does that mean to Roman still carrying around two belts, or in this case, Heyman still carrying around both belts? And then they're kind of sneering at the World Heavyweight title and acting like it's, Cole said, a consolation prize. And, yeah, now we've got Roman as the quote undisputed unified champion. Well, there's another belt that's coming into existence. And just like they're not explaining what happens if a SmackDown wrestler wins a Raw-based title, Alex, they're not explaining why there's still two belts that Roman holds if why they can call it unified when there's going to be this other belt on Raw. I think it's a mess. It feels like I hope that this would have been cleaner if Paul Levesque was solely in charge, but with Vince back, this sort of reeks of something Vince would go, nobody cares about that stuff.
Well, technically, he's still the undisputed champion because the new champion hasn't been crowned. So technically, there's still only one.
Yes.
So they can get away with that for another 2 weeks until it's going to become like an actual problem.
Yep.
speaking of that, do you remember, was it last week or the week before that Heyman said explicitly that Reigns was going to discuss the new title and he didn't say a word about it?
Oh, that's right. I'm glad you brought that up, because that was the plug by Heyman for this appearance, that Roman would address the new championship, and he didn't.
Yeah,
he didn't say anything about it.
That indicates a change of plans, and you can't. Nothing happened. Roman looking at it or ignoring it does not count as commenting on it.
I was going to say, he didn't look at it. Heyman did, but Reigns never did.
Yeah.
He acted like it wasn't there.
Yeah, good point. I mean, that seems like a change of plans. I mean, because Heyman isn't going to say something's going to happen unless it's the plan. You know, he's not going to make it up. He's not sloppy like that. So, for whatever reason. And to me, it seems like what they did tonight would have been planned. I mean, like, I don't seek out finding out what's going to happen ahead of time. I don't like that. But when I talked to people, I didn't ask, what's Roman? I did find out Roman was going to be at Night of Champions. I know that he was scheduled for it. I didn't know what his match was going to be, but I can't imagine it was any different than this. But I don't know why. I mean, it's not like the segment was at the end of the show and they ran out of time or running short and they had to cut, you know, a minute out of it. They could have absolutely had him address that. So, yeah, I doubt they forgot. It just sounds like there was some sort of strategic change of plans.
On to the actual match itself, my bigger question is, how did they get Owens and Zayn in agreement to do this? I don't know.
In what sense? I mean, they are the unified tag champs. They float between brands. They have to defend against both.
I mean the people going to Saudi Arabia, because they normally do not participate on those shows.
That's right. I wasn't even thinking about that.
So to me, I came out of that segment, I thought it was really good, and there's a lot of positives to it. But that was one of the questions I had. And then the other question is, basically, Reigns dedicated it to his dad and his uncle, right?
Yeah.
And made a big deal about the Usos dedicating something to him as a singles wrestler, blah, 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 blah. Okay? So either they're going to win or Sammy and KO aren't going to show up, or they're going to win by there's going to be some disqualification, nothing ending, and Reigns is going to rationalize the dedication to the Wild Samoans as being, they would have been happy with this situation. You know, we beat them up, we owned them. But honestly, what's the other finish here? Because did they beat Solo? Because that's not good either.
No, it's not.
Like, there's no good ending to this. And, well,
what,
and
it's just one big mess because you want to still keep Roman Reigns strong, but then you want to keep Solo strong, but then you want to defeat Owens and Zayn after they won the title. The whole thing's a big, giant mess from it. So I don't know why they even decided to announce this match. It makes no sense.
Well, with that said, I'm totally fine with it if Reigns and Solo just win the titles. Like, I'm totally okay.
Oh, yeah.
With
that. I am too. I mean, there's all kinds of, I mean, Reigns holding yet another title just adds to his mystique. And then it would free up Sammy and KO to be singles wrestlers, although Seth as a babyface is winning the belt. So, but, you know, I have no problem if we go on a journey towards Sammy eventually winning that title. But I'm still hung up on the idea that they booked Sammy and KO for Saudi Arabia. So I'm curious if they've softened their stance or everybody has a price or if we're going to get some sort of angle.
I'm really starting to think it's the latter. I'm like even talking myself more into it now as I'm sitting here. I have a feeling that with the dedication and all that kind of stuff, Solo and Reigns are going to go out there and they're just not going to show up. And I don't,
well,
I don't know.
Let me throw this in out. Javier, who's on hold, he just messaged and goes that Saudi Arabia and Syria have reestablished their diplomatic relationship. So maybe just enough happened that Sammy's actually okay with going now. Maybe something happened. I wasn't following that aspect of things.
Yeah, me neither. Maybe. Yeah. I mean, that could be the case.
Yeah.
It could be that simple. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. We're back to, well, let's just hope Roman wins then.
Yeah. Kyle, do you want to see Roman and Solo win, or is that too many belts for them?
I think that's too many belts. I just don't know. It's like, I understand that Roman Reigns is the biggest star, right? I get that, but the fact that they already created the World Heavyweight Championship and he already has two, I just don't know what sense does it make for him to hold on to every single championship in WWE for what reason? To see that he's the type of, we already know that he's a megastar. So I just don't. I just think it just messes up everything to be benefit one guy over everyone else. And it's like people thought that Cody Rhodes was going to be the champion, and that didn't happen. People thought Seth Rollins should be champion. I think he still should, because he still didn't defeat Roman. Reigns still didn't defeat Rollins. So it's like it's still that issue there, and it's like it doesn't really make sense for me to have Roman Reigns as champion of all champions and no one can defeat him, like he's going to be retired as champion. I just think that's little bit overkill and really repetitive and boring with this whole Tribal Chief stuff, and if he's going to be the champion still without any means, something different in this chapter of the Tribal Chief thing, that's how I view it. But I'll move on real fast about the whole women's tag team title situation. You had Alba Fire, Isla Dunn looking at watching Liv Morgan and Raquel versus Damage Control. I just think that's – now, why is that even – they have now two sets of women's tag team championships on the main roster now. So I'm like, why? I don't know why they even called them up and – they have NXT Women's Tag Team Championships. So what do you think where that will go? But that's it for me, as I should recall.
Okay, go. Alex, go ahead and comment on that. And then I want to add a couple notes on Reigns that neither of us picked up on, apparently.
I'm not qualified at all to talk about the NXT Women's Tag Title situation. I don't know anything about it. And I barely know who those two are.
And yeah, and I actually catch me up on Sammy's question, just because I got alerted on two things at once while he was asking his question before I threw you on a topic you're not ready to talk about. What did he ask about?
He was just asking about why you'd call up the NXT Women's Tag Champions and why there's two sets of titles on the show. But again, I haven't watched NXT.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, I don't even think you need to watch NXT to realize it's another part of the draft that is sort of messy. It'd be nice if they had a policy in place of where, okay, if you get drafted, you relinquish the belts, or if you have belts, then you remain on both brands until you lose one of the belts. Like, they could have gone either direction with that. Same thing with AJ. They could have explained that. And they didn't. So there's just too many things that they're not explaining, that because they can't be bothered to do so, which is annoying. But it, I mean, part of this too, you know, is this Vince McMahon just messing up because he has a disregard for this type of thing? And so, you know, Shawn Michaels and Paul Levesque are trying to figure out, you know, clean this up, but they're not able to clean it up because Vince might just mess it up again with something that he, you know, sneak interject something with a disregard for. It's like when, you know, I mean, he's done it before with NXT wrestlers where he's disregarded what's going on in NXT in what feels like a disrespectful way. So, I don't know. I think if you get drafted another brand and you're the champs, it's simple. Either explain they're going to be on both brands and defending them and doing double duty, or they relinquish the belts and there's a tournament, or even better, just don't draft people when they're champion.
Yeah, I'm in favor of the last option. Just don't put yourself in the situation to begin with.
Yeah, yeah. So Al emailed and just said Reigns did call it a consolation prize in the ring. And someone else said that he actually did look at the belt as he left after the segment. So he did look. I mean, we're in our defense. We're both typing up reports as it's happening, and then we pick our spots to type up analysis too. So unfortunately, even though, you know, we're detailing 98% of the show, there's little things here and there that we miss because we're not just kind of kicking back and keeping our eye on the screen the whole time. But so at least if that is the case, and I haven't gone back and watched, but I have no reason to doubt Al. Then it was, the promise was fulfilled, as brief and missable as it was for both of us.
Yeah, I'll take the L on him looking at it, but I think that Cole said that Heyman and Reigns called it a consolation prize. I don't think Reigns physically said
okay.
But it's what it is.
Yeah, and all Al said is in the ring, Reigns called it a consolation prize. So we'll just have to do a fact check or wait for someone else to confirm or deny one way or the other if they recall more so. But it wasn't significant enough to satisfy a couple of weeks of anticipation that was set up by Heyman's teaser that, you know, when he came back that he would, you know, acknowledge the new title. That is, even if technically he explicitly did, it was so brief. It feels like building it up more than it turned out to be. I'll just put it that way.
Yeah, they made it sound like that's what the promo was about, and it wasn't.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, let's jump to we have Chris from Oklahoma on hold. He dropped off. So let's go to Travis and Amy. Travis or Amy from Knoxville. Who's calling us? Is Travis or Amy or both of you? Which would be even better.
This is Travis. Can you hear me?
Awesome. Well, we're happy to have you, Travis. You attended tonight?
I did. Absolutely.
Yep. Awesome. Yep. So I'm glad you called. Good to have an outside correspondent here tonight. One thing Cole touted is that this was one of the biggest crowds they've ever had in that building. I don't know how many times you've attended there. I know you have before. Did that come across and talk about how full it was?
Yes, that was the biggest crowd I've seen at Thompson Bowling for a WWE event. Normally, there's a lot more tarped off sections, and I didn't get my tickets till like Wednesday evening. Didn't know if we're gonna be able to go, but wound up being able to. So, got last minute tickets, and they were up in the upper section was the only place I could get four together. And when we got in, just about every part that was not tarped off was full. And the amount tarped off was minus the stage area, you had maybe a third of the upper deck. And of course, Thompson Bowling is a cavernous arena for a college basketball arena. But yeah, Cole was not exaggerating. That was one of the largest crowds I've seen there.
They had a really nice wide shot from the upper deck that showed the whole venue, and it wasn't even like the hard camera had gaps that were normally there's a big section empty and they try to avoid showing it. So it looked good. It looked good. How would you rank the enthusiasm of the crowd?
It's weird. It's always a little weird in Knoxville for whatever reason. It's kind of just mediocre. There were moments where some enthusiasm would come out, but then at other points it was dead to be such a large crowd. There wasn't a whole lot going on at certain times, especially in the main event with Bobby and AJ. Periodically, there was a dueling, let's go AJ, let's go Bobby, let's go AJ, let's go Bobby. But then it would just go dead, and it was just silence. So I don't know. I know there was obviously some enthusiasm there with the amount of people, but in the show, in the arena, unless it was just where I was at, there was just not a whole lot of a crowd interaction. I didn't hear a lot of as much reaction as I thought I would on some of the entrances. I know with
interesting,
particularly Cameron Grimes coming up, you know, his debut, and it was in the arena, it was pretty much dead. I don't know if that's because there's not a lot of bleed over between NXT and WWE fans or what, but it was neutral. So kind of strange sometimes.
Who got the biggest reaction of the night overall? Or is there a standout best reaction? Was it Reigns? Was it Edge? Edge seemed to have a good advantage coming out first, at least in the TV entrances.
Right. Roman, yes. Roman easily had the bloodline easily had the largest reaction. At the beginning, of course, they did about 5 minutes before TV started. They went ahead and did AJ's full entrance and Ray's, and they both got good reactions. And then, of course, like you mentioned, Edge. Edge was the first one to come out on TV, and he got a pretty good pop as well. And then the very short Bianca segment, of course, being her hometown, when she got out, she got a good reaction as well. But other than that, I mean, there wasn't much. There wasn't much. There was a little bit for Sheamus, not huge. But yeah, overall, I mean, it was a bloodline easily.
As far as reaction for Bianca, was there a letdown when there wasn't more to her segment, or did it sort of work because, hey, there was this angle and she was in agony from the green mist? Or was there anything else done to give fans a bigger dose of Bianca that wasn't on SmackDown?
I think it was fine for the show. I didn't even realize Bianca, I knew she'd have to be there to make an appearance because it's her hometown. Then I didn't realize what her role was until we got to the arena and they were advertising championship celebration. And it's funny because last time I was there, maybe a year or so ago with Raw, she had her homecoming. And I told Amy, who was my wife with me, not here with me on the phone, obviously, but I was like, didn't they just have like the same type of thing last time when we were here? And so anyway, I wasn't too thrilled with that segment, but seeing Asuka come out and just have a little bit of development and everybody got to see Bianca and then get her out of there. But then afterwards, they announced the main event for the evening was Bianca versus Io for the women's title, which I did not stay to see.
Yeah, and boy, I mean, they sure were selling Bianca having, like, acid burns and was blinded by that green mist the way she was hyperventilating backstage afterwards. So for her to be able to recover enough to go wrestle later. But if you didn't say late enough for it, I assume that she was able to get her face flushed, her eyes flushed, and
I was
and still
curious
part,
about
part of that.
We had her, Yes, we had our daughters with us, and they were about to fall asleep in the stands, so we moseyed on out. But I was curious if she was going to come out with blue stains on her face still.
Alex, let me throw to you to ask Travis a question about his experience tonight.
Well, the reason that the crowd was so dead for the main event was because your hero just got shot in the segment before with the way she reacted to that whole thing.
Yes.
But
no, was that too much for you, Alex?
Yes, I hated it. Like, I liked the segment so much. And, I mean, first of all, like, is that a sign that Vince is back because somebody got humiliated in their hometown? Or is it really effective angle because she's in her hometown and it was totally unexpected? You can go either way. I hated how she sold it. I thought it took a lot of stuff out of it. Like, I've never seen somebody react like that to The Miz before, ever. And that's not a compliment.
Yeah, yeah. Travis, you were with your kids. How did they react to Bianca selling it as much as she did? Was that, I don't know how old they are, but was it like, did it cause stress or anxiety?
No, well, they're 6 and 4. So they were excited to see Bianca, and they got to see her, and they were more petrified of the fireworks, the pyro. And then by the time they recovered from that, the segment was over. So, you know, they didn't have much reaction.
Interesting.
But the production of that segment with in then commercial break when they were bringing out those big columns of balloons and putting out the red mat on the ring, it took them longer to do that than it did for the entire segment.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, I feel bad for all the balloon people. They went to all that work, and we barely got to see the balloons be part of a celebration. And I heard rumors Bianca worked on her speech all week and was really proud of it and rehearsed it. So, yeah, it's kind of a bummer. I want to ask you, did you put thought into who you thought would win these two triple threat matches and be a singles match? And are you happy with what happened? Are you surprised by what happened?
You know, the first match, the first triple threat, it was exciting. Like, I mean, you all have already spoken about how illogical it could be, but you know, that's a fun match between AJ Ray and Edge. Several middle-aged men out there still able to get after it and put on a good show. And that one, I really thought.
Austin Theory was the youngest. Austin Theory is 20 years younger than the next youngest person in that match.
That's quite the stat, but yes, that's true.
Yes, yes.
I was thinking about that in the main event with AJ and Bobby. I thought, man, both of these guys are, you know, mid-40s, but anyway, the first match with Ray, AJ, and Edge, I could have seen it going to any of them. As it was going on, I thought, who's going to take this pin? You know, how are they going to come out with a winner between these three? And I was thinking it might have went Ray's way just because of, you know, around the weight of popularity with him and Dom and the LWO, but AJ, of course, making his return, it made sense to me as well. But in the second match, I really had no idea. I was thinking, leaning towards Bobby, but it really didn't stand out to me. But in the final or the semifinal between AJ and Bobby, the one-on-one, I was leaning toward Bobby, but I was pleased with AJ just because I think that would make more of a fun match in Saudi Arabia, which seems like things there. It doesn't, you know, necessarily have to fit into the context of the WWE storylines with that show. So hopefully we'll get a fun match out of it and it'll all make sense down the road.
Yeah, yeah. Alex, do you want to ask Travis anything else?
No, you covered it for the most part. The only real question I had is, what was the reaction to Austin Theory, since Wade just brought him up, and his age relative to everybody else? And what match was the crowd into the most? I know you said the Reigns segment, but was there a particular match they liked more than everything else?
Dawson got the reaction you would expect. He got the boos. And people seem to enjoy kind of booing him, which he does a good job playing into it. It wasn't over the top or anything from the crowd because they're just not really over the top there. So, but he did get the reaction that that fit. And I would think the first three-way with Ray, AJ, and Bobby was probably the match that people were most into. It was almost like after the Bloodline segment, the air was just kind of sucked out of the arena. And I mean, I don't know if it came across on TV, but I imagine it did, that the women's tag match did not have much crowd participation in that one at all.
Yeah.
And then, like I said, the main event, it was more dead than I thought it would be. Between two big names with AJ and Bobby.
When we saw Baron Corbin just standing in the ring when Grimes made his entrance, did he get entrance music? And what kind of reaction did he get, if anything, when he came out?
He did get entrance music. It was no reaction. I really honestly, I didn't even see what one of my daughters asked me something. And then the next thing I see is Cameron Grimes pinning him. Like, I don't even know what Cameron did to earn the win on that one. So, but yes, he got the entrance, but he got no reaction either.
When Ray, there was a pop for Reigns when he said, acknowledge me. And then, but they also, it sounded like there were scattered boos at the beginning of his segment. So we got a big reaction, but like, talk about the ebb and flow of and characterize what the reaction is to him. Cause I am curious, especially when he's being nasty to the Usos. And I think fans are sympathetic to the Usos. They don't love them like they love Sammy, but clearly they're trying to portray them as more sympathetic. Solo's more stoic and, you know, it's hard to read, but did fans like say, oh, Reigns is in our presence. He's a big star. We're lucky he's here. We're going to cheer him cause he's a big star, but then we're going to boo him? Or did they kind of keep cheering him? Or did you not get a sense it was unanimous or, you know, overwhelmingly one way or the other?
Yeah, it was a weird mixture of, we know we're supposed to boo this guy because he's nasty and he's just gloating about how good he is, but we love him because it's special. And we want to cheer. We like the Bloodline. They're cool. They're popular. But we know we shouldn't because he's a terrible human. And we kind of like Jay. And there's so many twists and turns, and it was just an ebb and flow of Reigns. Everybody's like, yes, 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 Roman's here. But then it's, oh, you push Jimmy, boo, we like Jimmy. And then yes, we like Jay. We want to see Jay hit him, but we like this story, so keep it going. What's going to happen next? And then, you know, Paul gets on and gets a reaction, gets the boost too, just because he's Paul. So it's just such an interesting experience with them because there's so much going on with it. And, you know, I did not expect that announcement tonight at all, but it's fun. That's another twist that I wasn't expecting. And so keep the Bloodline storyline flowing.
I trust, did you think the show had a good flow to it? Just in terms of sitting through commercial breaks, that kind of thing. Did it seem like there were lulls? Did your daughter stay engaged in the even when there were commercials, the wrestlers standing in the ring? How did the pace strike you?
It wasn't bad. It did seem like there were a lot of commercial breaks, but I'm sure there were several in the matches, so that kept the interest pretty high throughout it. But it did seem like there were a lot of breaks, and maybe only in the arena like twice did they do any crowd interaction. They did like the DX cam, you know, show us your best DX, and everybody's fun, and some WWE Universe dance music that they had, and that was it. Usually I feel like there's more things going on. Sometimes the announcers will get up and talk, or the ring announcer will say some things in between. But there wasn't a whole lot going on in the arena. So whenever there was not a match and a commercial break, for the most part, it was pretty dead. You know, I think when Baron came out, he was just standing there for the commercial break. Of course, there was a commercial break during Roman's entrance, but it lasts so long anyway. It just kind of flowed naturally with his and the Bloodline's entrance to the ring. You know, Sheamus had his entrance, I believe, and then he sat in the ring for a few minutes until the commercial break was over and the other two came out. So there was a few spots where it was just dead, but for the most part, it wasn't bad. I just expected more whenever there were those dead periods with more crowd interaction, I guess.
Cool. Well, anything else, Travis, you want to add about your experience tonight?
No, it was a good crowd. I mean, it seems like in the last year or two, business has picked up for WWE. Like that was the largest crowd I've seen in my, I don't know, probably been to 5-6 shows at Thompson Bowling. So I don't know if it's the Bloodline, if it's Triple H, if it's something else, but the crowd's there, and it was the Arena 4 would approve it, so.
Cool. Well, Travis, I appreciate you calling up and sharing your experience tonight.
Absolutely.
We'll talk to you later on. If you want to be an on-site correspondent like Travis was tonight, drop me a line, WadeKellerPodcast@pwtorch.com. Let me know the date in the subject line, the date in the city of the show you're attending, and I'll be in touch, and we'll arrange to have you on the show. Speaking of arranging, have someone on the show. Alex, I told you beforehand, Nick Barbati was scheduled for the show. I screwed up. I think it's the first time in years I've done this. And I've maybe only done it once before. Double booked the show, got confused, didn't have my spreadsheet updated. Well, Nick is standing by. I'm sensing from his DMs he's a little ornery. So we'll see. But I want to get his take on the Uso situation. Nick, welcome to the show. Nick Barbati from Nick and Tom's Intercontinental Adventure. My apologies besides, you know, texting you. I wish I could blame Alex, but I can't. Welcome.
Well, you know, Alex has a lot to say about me behind my back, so it's fine. He can do it now while I'm on the call. But, you know, Wade, I love spending time home on a Friday night waiting to talk to you, only not to be able to talk to you and listen to 5 other people talk to you before I do. So, yeah, I'm a little ornery tonight.
Well, you know, we already took Travis' call. By the time you remembered, you have to push 1 in order to be on the show.
That's true. Listen, I thought it was a great show.
I didn't leave you on hold. I
did think, no, well, not this show. The SmackDown show was a great show.
Yes.
I was like, well, I'm so excited to talk about this show. And you know what? You're getting the Roman Reigns version of Barbati today. I'm going to pop in, as the caller Travis said, keep it special, and then get the hell out of here. But, you know, can I tell you how disappointed I am? How disappointed I am about this final for the tournament. I mean, I thought they could have taken such a much more creative approach to this thing. There is no reason Finn Balor is not in this main event. The title should not go on Seth Rollins, people. Everyone get the pitchforks ready. And, you know, to have a Finn Balor versus Edge final, I think would have worked really, really well, especially given their most recent history. I thought it was weird that they treated Edge like he was coming out for, like, his quinceañera or his bar mitzvah, and then he loses. The whole thing just felt a little strange to me. And I don't think AJ has the heat on him that he needs to right now, yet I still think he should be the one who wins because I don't think it should go on Seth Rollins. So that's where I am with the take on the tournament right now.
What, once Seth won, how deep was your list of candidates of opponents you wanted to see him face from the SmackDown side?
Wait, you wanted who? Finn Balor, you're talking about?
No. Well, once Seth did win, and you knew
Case. Yeah, I know. I got to be frank with you. There wasn't really anything that super excited me. I mean, who do we have? The guy whose eye he popped out that we just ignored, so it wasn't going to be Rey Mysterio. We've seen him in there with Edge plenty of times, especially when they already had their big match in Saudi Arabia. That suddenly didn't seem exciting for me. You know, this love fest for Austin Theory, I mean, I like Austin Theory enough, but that was like 100% not going to happen, and nor would it have worked. I honestly, the thing that probably would have made me feel most excited is if there was going to be a reboot on Bobby Lashley in some kind of way. And even though that in itself feels played, it feels very raw from like the past few years. You know, there is something about these titles that should feel a little emblematic of the shows that they're on. You know, the first triple threat match felt like there was a moment where I like kind of sat back and myself, I went, you know, it's kind of amazing. This feels like SmackDown. Like these are iconic SmackDown people here. So like that feels right that they should be on this, but why would one of them win the title and go to Raw? So I agree with all of your criticism, guys, on the how this tournament is structured. I think it's like really bizarre. And honestly, this isn't one of those things that we just chalk up as like a dig at Vince McMahon. This is where Triple H and whoever's writing this show needs to really be meeting people where they want to be in terms of the quality of things making sense. And this just didn't make sense in a big way. And honestly, we shouldn't have even been in this position to find out who Seth was going to go up against, because none of them would have been satisfying because they mixed up the rosters to get him away from these people in the first place. So just wasn't doing it for me.
Yeah. So on the Usos, Reigns and Solo front, a lot of interaction, a lot of body language. You know, it was compelling. What'd you think? Was this payoff? You said you liked the show. You've only griped so far about it, so you must really like the Reigns segment.
Yeah, well, you know, I because even I didn't gripe. I have like the grumpy guys from like the Muppets that are reviewing movies. No. I love the matches of the tournament. So let me get to this segment though. I mean, I love this segment. I do. You know what? One thing I will say is interesting is I am concerned about, you know, the impact of the Bloodline now on some of the supporting players. Like, I namely do think that, you know, even at the Backlash show in Puerto Rico where everything was hot, I feel like the temperature for Owens and Zayn was, like, way down. And I just worry about – I've said this to you before, Wade, about, like, the heat going too hot on people that now we're in NWO territory where, like, the baby faces have their moment, and then it just cools down way too fast after that. I think the segment's great. You know, I'm a big Jay fan, and I always have been, always will be. It's interesting, like, his role in this now, to see him really fully fade into that the tag team. I've always wanted him to be a little bit more separated out. But, you know, there's the real story for me of where the Bloodline is right now is in Solo Sikoa. I think his acting – and just the command that he has on every time he's on the screen is just off the charts brilliant. I mean, he doesn't just like reach a bar of passability. I mean, he's excelling with the likes of Paul Heyman and Roman Reigns. And I think he's brilliant in there as really being like holding his own as a real tentpole to this whole thing. So I think everybody involved in that segment was awesome. I liked the twist of what they're going to do for the Saudi Arabia show. It fits perfectly, I think, to advance the storyline. And, you know, to have us have a day where the Usos go up against Roman Reigns and Solo Sikoa, I think it's fantastic. And I loved the final punchline of the greatest tag team of all time and have it be the Wild Samoans. I thought that was just, like, excellent, excellent writing.
Alex, do you want to ask Nick a question?
No, I disagreed with everything he said until the Solo Sikoa part, so we're good now.
That's fine. You want Austin Theory to be champion, so it's okay.
I just think it would have worked. I feel like Theory's kind of lost in the shuffle on SmackDown. I think he'd be better off on Raw. That's all. Like, he's a heel now in a land where he's like the number five heel because of the Bloodline, whereas on Raw he could be a pesky top tier heel. Like, he can't be that on SmackDown.
You know what the problem is, Alex, though? He doesn't have his own identity yet. He has all the tools. I mean, but to the point where now it's becoming that annoying thing. It's almost like Drew McIntyre version 1.0 from all those years ago where, yes, we know he's the anointed one by Vince McMahon and everything, but there was such a miss when it comes to the personality. And, like, it's almost worth resenting. Like, everything, all this energy, all this effort is going to waste. Like, yes, he has the tools in the ring. The matches can be, you know, good to pretty good to very good, but no real stinkers, but nothing really, like, wow, wow, wow. But it all comes down to him knowing who he is. You know, they lean in very much on his age as being something to marvel at. But it's also an obvious hindrance to him really having the confidence and the ability to tell the stories of who he is. And that's lacking. You know, the literal laughable thing of just giving him the beard and having that suddenly replace the selfie thing as like a one-for-one to show he's got a new edge and toughness to him, it's insufficient. And maybe it's just going to be growth that he has to have. I think really what they should be actively doing right now is going on a search to find him his perfect counter opponent to really draw him out. You know, it's probably a poor comparison, but, you know, we all know that there was a time when they couldn't get Triple H to that next level. I mean, this was a good-looking man who had all the tools. He was able to, you know, to wrestle well, but he was not really connecting. And then they found The Rock. Now, is there going to be a Rocky Maivia in here for Austin Theory? No, but there could be someone that he should be inspired by to really, you know, create a compelling story and, you know, to really tell excellent matches with. And that's really what I feel like Austin Theory honestly needs. And it's a shame John Cena wasn't more for him. That was the big missed opportunity.
And yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, because part of the problem with Theory and part of why I totally agree with you, they're looking for who he is. But a big part of the problem is that he wins all of his matches like he wins more like the Honky Tonk Man. And that's a problem. He needs to win more like Triple H. Like Triple H would cheat from time to time, but at the same time, there were instances where Triple H won because he was better. They don't do that with Theory at all.
Yeah.
Like the Cena thing was a good opportunity to do that, but no, they have to do the visual tap out and then he kicks them in the balls and they do all that. They do the stupid stuff where he tosses people out of the ring and the triple threats and he wins off of somebody else's moves. Like he never just beats people. And that's why I wouldn't have minded giving him the title and having him just beat Seth. Just have him beat him. And then from there, he can cheat here and there, but still have him beat people. Like, there's no reason that he can't wrestle people like Johnny Gargano and just beat them. And they don't do that. Like, a lot of the problem with him is stuff that he doesn't have control over, unfortunately. I agree with you that he's looking for something else, but he's not being aided by the process at the same time.
His dropkick was amazing tonight, by the way, and they touted that. But, Nick, they do not let him they talk about him as a big deal, but they don't show him being a big deal other than he shows off his athleticism and he has a title, and that's sort of it. But Honky Tonk Man is not a bad comparison, and I am not at all impressed or enamored with I think they're setting him back in a way that's going to be more difficult than I think they're taking into account to rebuild him. I think he'll be fine. It's just going to be a longer, bumpier road. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, I agree. Wait, what did you say was amazing tonight? You said you started off by saying something was amazing.
He hit a dropkick when Lashley and Sheamus were engaged in mid-ring, and he like went over the shoulders of like Lashley and Sheamus and dropkicked him in the head. That was, and they drew attention to him. That's the thing that makes him special. A number of things have potential, but you undercut all of it when he is the Honky Tonk Man type champion.
Yeah, well, he also needs a more definitive finisher. So even if, you know, he does all those the shenanigans that he's going to, there should be something more exciting and more like wow about how he concludes his matches. You know, I agree with all that. I think my challenge with it is viewing, you know, him, for example, as someone who is going to be in this championship final, and even AJ Styles, to make it actually more relevant in the immediacy conversation, is there are other people. There are other people who could make this better. And let me tell you why I'm so averse to Seth Rollins winning the championship. Is because I'm almost at the point of, I actually think Seth Rollins has always kind of been like the 1B to Roman Reigns in these past few years. And this just makes it almost like too definitive that, like, man, if we did have a second title, it would just go on him. I think that there are other people who could, A, really benefit from having that championship. I actually don't think Seth Rollins needs it in the least. But I think this is a real opportunity to just get excitement onto the Raw brand. Seth Rollins is obviously deserving of any recognition that he gets. He's like the hardest working man in the whole show, and he's been going. But you know, that's almost exactly why he doesn't need the championship, is the respect is already on the team. When you have so many other people who are just on the cusp of, like, really going to that next level, which is why I was pushing so hard for Finn Balor. And honestly, why at this point I'm pushing for AJ Styles. It's not the undercard, the under, what's the word I'm looking for? The novelty of it just not being Seth Rollins. It's the idea that, you know, you want someone who's now going to really benefit and get a spark to it. We know what Seth Rollins with the championship is going to look like. He's going to look like Seth Rollins. You know, I think that the championship on somebody else would be, you know, a little bit more, you know, defining of a new day. And I think that's what Raw needs to feel like, quite frankly.
Well, one thing I want to get your take on, Nick, is the dynamic as it's progressed, and if you like it, with Jay and Jimmy, and how each of them are reacting to Roman, with Roman targeting Jimmy in a way that it seemed at one point when he was targeting Jay. So just talk about that. I mean, Solo's doing his thing, and I agree. He's super impressive, and he's like this X factor, and I love that he whispers. He likes to sing softly off mic. Like, it's just, I don't need to be in the spotlight. I just want to beat people up, but I don't need microphone. I don't want people to even know what I'm saying, but I'm going to say what's on my mind. I'm just going to say it to you and not the world. I love that about him. It's different. But, yeah, talk about Jimmy getting jumped in the face and Jay's body language and that tonight and kind of the arc that they're on with him.
Yeah, so I'm not the world's biggest Jimmy fan, especially in his return era, you know, and through the bloodline. I think he's been the least effective of everybody in that cast. Now, with that said, there is something super powerful about the moments where Roman is now putting his hands on him and dressing him, and it's not Jimmy though. It's really Jay's reaction, and then thus the reaction of everyone around, you know, to then put your eyes on Jay to see how he's reacting. Now, Jimmy's perfectly fine in the role that he's in, but, you know, as someone who really wants to see the Jay character like break out, it is something a little like, oh God, this is just so putting him back firmly into the tag team rather than, you know, I don't necessarily see Jay breaking out and as a solo man then confronting Roman. I think it's still now we're in this more of an ensemble feel, you know, that is going to take on this whole bloodline thing. But it's pitch perfect. I mean, in terms of the actual performances. And, you know, I will say it feels a little less like we know where we're going in the long term with the bloodline. And I don't mean we as the audience. I mean we as, like, whoever's conceptualized this program. I think everything else up until WrestleMania felt very deliberate. I feel like the pacing made great sense. Since WrestleMania, for me, it feels like they know what peaks they need to hit, which is, you know, like at some point we're going to need Roman to put his hands on Jimmy, for example. But everything else feels like one step forward, two steps back in terms of the storytelling. It feels a little hesitant, a little bit more paused than usual, but not in the pause to keep it, you know, as a tempered storytelling. It just feels like a lack of confidence in where they're going, which is why I think, you know, even having Solo Sikoa in the ring so much and having him main event shows so much, I don't view it so much as them, you know, just now really going trying to define his character so much as just leaning in on him to fill time. And so I'm just not as high on the storyline as I was a month ago, and by a pretty big margin.
Interesting. What can save it in the next, like, especially in, like, Night of Champions? Do you want to see Roman and Solo win? How do Jay and Jimmy react to what happened this week? Do you have something in mind based on where we landed tonight?
Yeah, I definitely want to see Roman and Solo win. I love the idea of Roman having another championship, and I think, you know, having that full break from the Usos to then, you know, step up against Roman. I mean, I think we kind of need to get there. And I don't know if that is at Money in the Bank, which I don't think would be such a bad time period to do that, because I assume by the time you get to SummerSlam, you don't want Roman in a tag team match. But I do think we need to start getting there, because there's a point where you don't want this storyline to be too removed from a Roman defending the undisputed Universal Championship. I mean, that at some point is where people are going to be hungry to see is that belt in play a little bit more. But then also, like, to get this thing through, because it's just we're not nearly as far off from where we were in January as probably by the time July hits we should be. And this is my opinion.
Cool. Yeah. Anything else you want to throw in, Nick, on the show tonight?
No, like I said, I thought it was a good show. I think they have every reason to be concerned about what's going on with the women's division. I'm not impressed by, in general, what I'm seeing. I do like, the fact that it looks like they're dipping back into Asuka. I have to say, there's a point with this where I think they really need to start thinking about getting that belt off of Bianca. I think the crowd reaction in Puerto Rico was a canary in the coal mine, and I think it's time to make a shift. Is it to Asuka? I mean, I would say no. I would go full on to Io Sky. I think she's earned it. She had the better match. I think there's more excitement and enthusiasm for her. But I think at this point, one thing I will say is that I like about them dipping back into Asuka is there was something about Asuka's loss at WrestleMania that felt very definitive. I remember turning to my friend watching the show and said, I feel like that's the last time we're going to see Asuka have a like championship title shot for like maybe ever. And it's good to see that that's not the case. So, to have her back in there. There's only so many times you can like fully redefine someone and elevate them all the way up. If she gets the title, then maybe it's like a gold watch moment again. But this one felt like, okay, no, there's another burst of life here. So, good on her for it. But it's time for someone to win that title from Bianca. She's not gaining anymore by holding it any longer.
So do you still have anything left to say on your show this weekend?
Is that an insult? Is that another insult?
No, it's a compliment. You brought it.
Listen, Go ahead. I brought the heat. Wade, I'm recording tomorrow, and I'm Tomless tomorrow, as you know. Tom is on assignment for fun, I think, actually. So he's off. This is the first time I'm flying solo. They're putting me in the wait, I'm going to have to try to remember to hit record, which is, I know, probably sounds like not an issue, is a major issue.
No.
And then figure out how to convert something to an MP3 to send you. So I'm bringing a guest on. You all know him. You love him. It's Sean. So he's going to be calling it. We're going to be doing the call in the morning, and then we're going to be getting that the file into you. And I'm don't tell Tom, Wade. But this is like the pilot for the Nikki's Club, because if you don't remember why we call it the Nikki's Club, I'm going to tell you that story tomorrow. So make sure you listen to the Daily Cast.
Very good. Nick and Tom with Tom scratched off. Sean Radican joining Nick tomorrow.
Not Sean Radican. No, wait, not Sean Radican. From Brattleboro.
Sean.
Did you hear me?
Murfreesboro.
Sean from Brattleboro.
From Murfreesboro.
Oh, Murfreesboro.
Sean from Tennessee.
That was Nick from Brattleboro. Murfreesboro, yes.
Oh, cool. You know what's funny is I just assumed it was Radican when you said it was going to be Sean, and then I was like, oh, it would be funny to do a bit where it's Sean from Tennessee, and then it's Sean from Tennessee after all. Cool.
Yeah, it is. So obviously I can't even remember where he's from, because he told me he doesn't want to use his last name before. So that Sean's going to be on with me. I've never met Sean Radican. I would love to talk to Sean Radican. So that's where we're going. So listen tomorrow. Thank you both.
I want to hear you and Sean Radican together. I think that'd be Jersey and then the both your accents, like just the mix of those two, I just think needs to be on a podcast together.
Well, I need like a neutral ground with Todd Martin. Because when I've gone into his world, it's a little intimidating. Like, I need him on a Saturday morning, live mic, me with a coffee, me on a Sunday night at 10 o'clock, you're never going to get the best. Give me a Saturday morning, like, with the fix with you guys. I want to do a run-in and get the hell out of there. So thank you both very much for having me tonight. I'm going to bed because I got to do free work for you in the morning, Wade. But I love you both. Have a great show.
Thank you, Nick. Appreciate it. All right. Speaking of Tennessee, we have an old friend. This is like an all-star party, Alex. This is just fun. We got Javier still on hold. We got Brad and Ryan on hold. Chris from Oklahoma maybe might call back. But first things first, we got Ian from Tennessee. If you listen to our archive shows, you hear Ian every week, and it's always fun when he drops by. Ian, welcome back. How's it going?
I'm losing my voice because I just left Thompson Bowling Arena from SmackDown, and I've been screaming my head off for almost 3 hours. So I apologize if my voice sounds like very raspy right now.
You sound just fine, just fine. So we had Travis Cole earlier, who's in the building, but he had two young daughters. He had to leave before the dark matches. So the announced main event. So I'm kind of curious: is Bianca still writhing in pain and having hyperventilating, or did they clean her up well, and did she have a full fledged match?
She had a probably a 10-minute match, but she was milking the pain injury like way too much throughout the match. Io basically dominated, and then Bianca hit her finisher 1-2-3, and then she went home.
Hmm. How did the crowd react to her tonight, in your opinion, both for the initial entrance, but also coming out the second time? Was it a celebration, or because she was selling the eye injury, were people concerned? You know, like what to characterize that?
I would say when she came out for her match, most of the crowd had left after the first arc match, but the crowd still popped for her pretty hard, but a lot of people left because they knew there's no way Bianca's losing to Io at the end of the show.
That is fair. You know, I mean, that's they're not wrong if that's what they were thinking. So tell us what else stood out on the show. What was your experience like tonight?
The first arc match was a lot of fun. It was Street Profits and the Usos. Montez is so over with the crowd right now. He was taunting the Usos, doing the acknowledge me chant. The crowd actually popped a lot louder for Edge than I initially anticipated. Edge probably, I would say, had the loudest reaction of the entire show.
Interesting. Yeah. I mean, sometimes the first big name babyface benefits from that. But like you're saying the Street Profits am I right? The Street Profits were the dark match beforehand?
Yeah, it was Street Profits, Usos, first dark match, and then Bianca and Io, second dark match.
Yeah. But one was before the show and one was after, or they did it both after? I'm sorry, that's what I'm just trying to clarify.
They did it both after. They did a first start before the show. It was LWO and the OC for like 10 minutes before the show.
Who from the LWO? Ray and Legato.
Not Santos and Ray, essentially. It wasn't Santos and Ray, it was the other two.
Yeah.
I can't think of their names right now.
Yep, so that explains the fact that Edge got the big pop because, again, that big babyface, the first big-name babyface always – well, not always, but, you know, almost always is getting one of the bigger reactions of the night. And with all the respect to, you know, Joaquin and Cruz, it's you're going to get a bigger – you know, Edge is going to get that star response. Although, actually, I don't know if I asked Travis or, Edge came out, but AJ Ray were already in the ring. How did their pops how did the crowd react? Did they get full ring entrances before SmackDown went on the air? And how did that compare to Edge? Because that kind of goes against my statement that Edge was the first big babyface to come out. He just was the first one to be televised.
Yeah, so it was after so Michael Cole got his entrance. Wade Barrett had a pretty loud reaction from Knoxville, pretty surprised by that. Then AJ had a big pop. Ray's was kind of a little disappointing, in my opinion, but Edge was like the full-on, like running to each side of the crowd and then looking at the belt. So Edge had the bigger reaction out of the first triple threat match.
All right, cool. Alex, do you want to ask you anything?
The only thing is what's funny is on TV – AJ didn't get an entrance either time. Did he get entrances in the arena?
Yeah. He did. So what was funny was it was after the celebration for Bianca, the stage crew was running behind on getting the tarp out of the ring. So once AJ literally went out there, he was basically playing with the crowd for an extra 3-4 minutes because they were running behind. So as soon as he slid in, then Lashley came out.
Got it.
Yeah, it was a little weird seeing AJ just, like, standing out there. He was like, oh, I don't know, I'm just waiting for them to finish so I can get in the ring.
How did the flow of the show feel to you? We asked Travis the same thing. He had a couple daughters with him and a young daughter, so, you know, it can kind of change the dynamic in terms of being at a TV taping with pauses in between and that kind of thing. How did it work for you? I know they've gotten some bad grades pre-COVID. They've kind of cleaned it up post-COVID in terms of keeping people entertained. You've been to a lot of WWE shows. How did this compare?
It was a very smooth show. Each dark match was very entertaining. You could kind of tell when they went to commercial break because, like, the pace, like, just went to a screeching halt. Like, during the main event, when they went to commercial, like a doctor was going into the ring to wipe the blood off Bobby Lashley, which I didn't even notice. He got cut during his triple threat, so that felt kind of odd. The crowd was like was booing for that because it was slow on the action now. But every match like felt needed. Even the Cameron Grimes one was like short and sweet to the point. And every match just worked so well with the crowd. So it was overall a very, very good show to go to live.
Very, very cool. Was the women's tag we heard just, it came across on TV too. It's pretty weak crowd response. Did it seem like anybody in that situation was more over and the others were pulling them down, or was the crowd just sort of down from, kind of exhausted from the Bloodline segment and anticipating the main event? How do you characterize that?
It definitely felt the weakest. Even like during the beginning, Bailey had a little fun interaction with Michael Cole when they were coming back from commercial. But the crowd was just like kind of amped for that. A lot of people went up to get concessions, bathroom, look at the merch table. So everybody kind of was like amped for that match.
Yeah. Anything else you want to relay about your experience tonight? Anything stand out in terms of crowd chants or? Yeah, anything.
I will say I was very surprised, but Lashley had a lot of chance during his triple threat match and during the main event. He is definitely over with the crowd right now, and I was disappointed that he didn't win. I don't know what they're doing with Lashley, but it was he was very over at the event tonight.
I assume, and this is not an indictment of their potential or what they've accomplished, but I'm assuming there wasn't much of a reaction when some of the NXT wrestlers appeared on the big screen. Grayson Waller, the women's NXT champs, or Pretty Deadly. I don't think anyone else did. Was there anything surprising in terms of what appeared on the video screen during the show?
Pretty Deadly had no reaction. Grayson Waller kind of had a few claps, but no NXT had like a big reaction. I mean, a lot of people cheered when Cameron Grimes came out and won in 20 seconds, but nothing NXT wise stood out.
Did the fans seem to know who Cameron Grimes was?
A lot of the diehard ones, there was a lot of kids there, so a lot of kids didn't care, but a lot of the diehard fans were pretty happy to see him.
Yeah. Anything else you want to share, either about just being on site or anything else on the show that you have an opinion on?
I will say there was, during the Bloodline segment, whenever he said that he was and Solo were teaming up at the Night of Champions, the whole crowd literally were gasped. I could hear like everyone gasping, like, wow, did not expect that whatsoever.
Yeah. What do you think?
I mean, I'm very intrigued to see where they're going with that story. It's definitely, my brother was there with me. He's thinking the Usos are gonna cost Solo and Roman the match. I don't know what to think. They keep throwing curveballs left and right at me.
Yeah. Anything else, Ian, you want to share?
I mean, overall, I go any chance they come here, and definitely Knoxville is a very fun wrestling town to go to. I was very surprised by the turnout.
Yeah.
Of the stadium. Last time I went last year, it didn't seem that full, but I was very happy to see a lot of people there tonight.
Do you think it was announcing Roman Reigns in Knoxville felt kind of special that they got the first Roman appearance since Mania, or was is Belair helping to sell tickets, and she's been a champ for a long time, so they see her as a big star, or the world title tournament? Like, what's your – I don't know how you would assess it, but do you have an opinion on what the key was drawing, or is it just WWE's a hotter product and the economy's good enough in Knoxville? Like, what led to this?
It was when I got the tickets, nothing had been announced. I was very keen on the draft, seeing who all was going to be at SmackDown. Edge was a big draw for me personally when I first started watching wrestling. Is when Edge retired, and getting to see Edge wrestle live tonight was a big draw for me. I think it was more Roman, because honestly, Wade, they didn't announce anything for Bianca until we got there, and they said Bianca's having a celebration tonight. So we didn't even know Bianca was going to be on the actual show. We thought, I just thought she'd be on a dark match, but I think it was more so Roman being there. I saw a lot of, We the One shirts there. So I think Roman was the big draw for everyone tonight.
Interesting. All right. Well, Ian, it's always good hearing from you. It's less frequent than it used to be, but feel free to call in more.
Absolutely, guys. You guys have a great night.
Yeah, and your voice held up just fine. Thanks.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah, you bet. All right. We're going to move a little more rapid fire through what is left here of our callers before we get to Javier and get his take on what we've been saying. We'll start with Chris in Oklahoma, who was able to call us back here after having to drop off for a few minutes. Chris, thanks for holding patiently. What is on your mind about tonight's SmackDown?
Well, it's more about Raw and SmackDown when it comes to like events and in general. For example, they're going against the playoffs, NBA playoffs. They're going up against a lot of other sports going on at the same time as Raw and SmackDown. Do you think there is a chance that possibly part of this Endeavor deal could see one of the big names, SmackDown or Raw, being moved away from the nights and maybe changing it up just a tad because of the competition?
What night do you think they'd avoid competition? Because I don't think you can anymore. I mean, it's busy every night.
I know. I don't think that it isn't. But I don't know what they can do. I mean, they kept touting that, you know, Raw was a loaded show, SmackDown was a loaded show, but I mean, they keep constantly getting hit by either playoffs or Monday Night Football when football season comes out. And it's like I'm at a loss of what – if it's something that they can fix or if it's something they have to think of, okay, maybe less is more. Maybe we need to do something to where we can work it out, you know, work through it and maybe give them – you know, give them less content for more, you know, more of a punch. I mean, I really don't know what they could do because I know in the 90s we couldn't do it. We didn't have this, you know, like it is now.
Yeah. I mean, Alex, I get the sense that WWE's like, we're just going to do what we're going to do. And we're getting paid more money than we ever dreamed we'd get paid. And we're just going to do what we're going to do. I don't sense there's like a ton of counter programming. Like, I don't think they put Roman on tonight for any reason other than it fit the pace to their storylines and Roman's schedule. I don't think they did the tournament the way they did it with the idea being, oh, it's the NBA and NHL. I mean, they're just going to have to face that. That's what happens. They know there's football. They know there's, you know, playoffs that come around that are going to affect Monday and Monday, Tuesday and Friday for them. I don't think there's really anything they should or that they could do or should do. What do you think?
No, not at all. They're a 52-week-a-year entity, and everything else runs in seasons, regardless of the time of the year, except for what? There's like a month in the summer where, other than baseball, there's nothing going on. They're always going to have competition from something. And, I mean, we've even heard from Vince McMahon over the years that they look at everything as competition, whether it's Succession or The Mandalorian or, you know, name whatever. So yeah. They're not trying to – I don't think they're trying to program against anything specifically. I totally agree with you that they're to the point where they're going to do what they're going to do. They got their TV deals, and I don't think they're paying one bit of attention to that. You know, we can look at some of it, especially when football starts. You know, when you have a marquee matchup on a tonight that maybe Raw ratings are down. But other than using it as a veiled excuse for things like that, I don't think that's the case at all.
Chris, anything about tonight in particular you want to bring up?
Well, one thing really surprised me, and y'all talked about it like the very first of it. It really surprised me that they're having them go do the tag match in Saudi Arabia. I'm be really curious to hear in the next few days what led to Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens agreeing to go. That's really all I was thinking of is like, wow, that's a kind of shock to me that they would do that. Also, one other thing, do you think that the Bloodline storyline, the tensions between Usos and Roman are kind of getting rushed because they have to have the PLE in Saudi Arabia a little bit? Maybe something is kind of going to cause a rush into the storyline, and it's not going to play out as slow as what we anticipate? Or do you think you'll slow down after the PLE and after everything happens?
So it's funny that Chris is characterizing this as beating it, because to me, this is a major development. I think people can look at a tag team title match and go, well, that's not Roman defending his title. He should be defending this title more often. This is stalling. This is dragging things out. Come on, let's get to it. Give him a fresh opponent. Have Jay or Jimmy break away. Let's get to it. And I don't see it that way, but I think some people would see it that way, that they want – that this is a stalling tactic. To me, this just feels like a good beat in the rhythm of the story, because I think it would be rushing things to suddenly have had, you know, Jimmy and Jay break up like this week and set up a singles match. I am curious what they end up doing at SummerSlam. That's going to be a big match. Is it by then? Roman against – I don't think it's going to be Cody. I think they're going to wait till Mania next year. So is it Jimmy or Jay by that point? Is there even another candidate?
Well, there's another candidate in the sense that what could happen, and I was thinking about this when Nick was talking earlier, but is it possible that Reigns and Solo win the titles, and instead of getting what we thought this whole time with, you know, Jay breaking off and challenging Reigns for the world title, is it possible that instead we get an implosion of the Bloodline where it's Solo and Roman defending their newly won tag titles against the Usos?
Interesting.
Like, none of us ever thought of that as a possibility before.
Yep.
But after tonight, that's like firmly possible. Like, that could be the direction this goes.
That's a hell of a SummerSlam match, by the way.
It is. And you get all of them involved. And the other thing that this does with Reigns being a tag champion for the moment is, call it stalling, call it what you will, but it allows you the opportunity to build up that other title in the meantime. Because if Reigns is in a tag match, yes, there's going to be a section of us that thinks Reigns should go on last regardless. But if he's in a tag match, it makes it a little bit easier to have the other world title headline the show, thus building up its importance. So there could be a couple different sides to doing this.
What about the chance of something in the tag match? Because now we've got Sami and KO crossing paths with the Bloodline again. And Sami got a nice pop, a crowd chant. I mean, so it's not like people are like, oh, I've been there, done that. Is there a chance this situation with the tag titles, one way or the other, whoever comes out of that match with the belts, leads to Sami getting a deserved rematch one-on-one against Roman at SummerSlam? Do they go back into that well?
I would love to tell you they would, but I think Sami has cooled off way too much for that to be a viable option at this point. And even this with Reigns and Sokoa against Sami and Owens, like, I just want Sami and KO to do something else. Like, I'm just kind of burned out on them against the Bloodline right now. It has nothing to do with the Bloodline itself. It's just, like, I feel like we haven't watched Reigns or the Usos wrestle anybody else in, like, 6 months. Like, and I'm all for the long-term storytelling. And if this in fact leads to Reigns and Sokoa winning, being done with Sammy and Owens, and then Sammy and Owens kind of go their separate ways on a show that could use their star power separately, mm-hmm. then I think that's probably for the best. But
yeah.
That's just kind of where I'm at with it. I like the bloodline part of it, but I just want them to be involved with somebody else.
Yeah. Chris, anything else quick from you before we move on?
No, no, no. Thank you, guys.
All right, cool. Good. Thanks for checking in. All right, let's jump to Brad from Florida here. Brad, thanks for holding. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind about SmackDown tonight?
Hey guys, I don't want to keep you so long, you and Alex, but I'll be quick. But I guess my point is, I was surprised to hear the two guys who were at the show tonight. I think it was Ian and Travis. I forget, but they said how great the crowd was into it, and I did not see one person standing. I did not see. That's an exaggeration. I saw one person or two people standing, but there was no standing for entrances. I usually gauge it by looking at, you know, when the wrestler turns to the crowd opposite the hard cam and either raise their fists or raise their hands or gives them a look or whatever. Edge did it. Styles did it a few times. Lashley did it. There was like no reaction. There was like no one standing. There was no one, jumping out of their seat. And that gasp that I was waiting for when Roman said he was going to go after the tag titles with Solo because the Usos couldn't pull it off, I did not hear that gasp. Now, it makes me think maybe the arena was not mic'd up correctly because, you know, I was at the Raw on Monday night with Seth Rollins, and I heard, you know, things, you know, online and whatever, that the crowd seemed very weak and very not into it. I could tell you that crowd, at least visually, was standing for every entrance. They were on their feet, and it was loud. I'm wondering if it's a miking issue that WWE is having over the last few shows, or did that crowd not sound dead? Because I thought this was one of the best SmackDowns of the year, and I think that the crowd absolutely killed what could have been a great show. I'm not comparing them to Puerto Rico, guys. I'm not comparing this to Clash of the Castle.
Yeah, that's tough.
But what I'm saying is they were awful. That was one of the worst crowds I can remember on any SmackDown show going back years, to be honest.
Yeah, it did not jump out to me as a red-hot crowd. That said, it didn't jump out to me as a especially weak crowd. I mean, they were into Roman. They were chanting Sammy. They were into the wrestling matches. I don't know, Alex. To me, it didn't feel like a remarkable crowd, high or low. How about for you coming into tonight's post show when we heard from a couple of people?
No, I tend to agree. We talked about this, but they were kind of dead for the main event, and I felt like they were excited for the first match. And we really haven't talked about this, but I thought that first triple threat was kind of a clunky mess. And maybe that had something to do with it. Maybe I'm not the only one that feels that way. Maybe I am. I don't know. But that could have something to do with it. The other part, too, and it's kind of a weird thing, but they got kind of some repetitive stuff, you know, with seeing AJ and Lashley twice, and then you have your biggest star come out in the middle of the show, and you follow that up with a nothing tag match with a bunch of people that right now no one cares about. Like,
mm-hmm.
Liv Morgan is a black hole of everything she touches for the last 3 or 4 months.
Yeah.
And I feel terrible for Rodriguez for being dragged into that hole with her. And Bayley's great at everything she does, but she's also stuck in a terrible rut right now that unfortunately neither her or anybody else is helping her dig out of. So that kind of hurt too. You know, most of these shows build up to the crescendo of Roman Reigns, and the way this show was laid out did not allow for that. So I think that has something to do with it. The other part, and I hate to bring this up because I'm with you, Brad. I'm not comparing them,
mm-hmm.
but when last week we were treated to the Puerto Rican crowd, which made a SmackDown that was like super ho-hum seem very important.
Yeah.
It's, it's hard to see those two shows on back-to-back weeks and not think this crowd is dead, even if it's like a completely subconscious thing that you know is an overreaction.
Yeah.
Brett, what'd you think?
Yeah, no, that's fair points. I just thought they were especially bad. I mean, whatever. It doesn't really matter, but it took away from my enjoyment of the show a little bit. And again, not comparing them to Puerto Rico or anything like that, but just a regular SmackDown crowd. Like, this reminded me of, there was a Wilkes-Barre Raw that was the most dead, worst crowd you could ever. And it reminded me of that. Like, it just was that bad. But whatever. Regardless, it doesn't really matter. Just two very quick things. Number one, did the end of the with Rey Mysterio going off the top rope and hitting Edge, did that seem extremely strange to you guys? Like at the end of the first match, the first triple threat, was there something weird about that?
It was a botched move. It was definitely a botched move. And, you know, they did the move earlier where there was the Stereo 619 that was set up with Ray sending Edge and Styles into the ropes. And Edge went to one rope and Styles went to one, not the opposite side, but the 90-degree angle middle rope. And I thought, oh, Ray's going to hit one and then hit the other. And I thought, this is cheesy and it's too cute by half. But then Edge, like, gets up and stumbles over and falls next to Styles, which was awful. I mean, what are the odds that Edge would, you know, stumble up but then fall right into position? So I don't know if Edge was off or what. And I don't want to read too much into it. It's just, you know, mistakes happen. It could be happenstance. But a couple spots were just not right. There did seem to be something wrong with that. What was your take watching that, Alex?
Yeah, I thought it was super clunky. And at first I kind of chalked it up to ring rust for Edge and AJ, mm-hmm. but then we saw the main event, and that was super smooth and really good. So I tend to think it was more Edge. Yeah. The finish that you're talking about, Brad, the intention, like Michael Cole laid out what their intention was, which was kind of silly. But what I gather was supposed to happen was Ray was supposed to come off, and Edge was supposed to catch him with a spear and then eat the forearm. So it'd be like a flurry of finishes at the end, and then Edge loses. But clearly, instead, they just kind of bumbled into each other and awkwardly paused and did nothing until AJ saved the day. But that's what the intention was, based on what I could gather.
Well, yeah.
Brett.
Yeah. Really interesting. My last thing is just on... AJ Styles and the Grayson Waller effect. You know, I believe that Grayson's going to make a big splash. I called you up. You know, I was gushing about him. I know you guys aren't gigantic NXT followers and whatever, but we did see some of it play out on the main roster about a year ago with AJ Styles and Grayson Waller. And it played out a lot on NXT. You know, AJ Styles came down there. He had a huge feud for 2 or 3 weeks with Grayson Waller down there. I'm wondering if you guys see a possibility that, you know, Grayson's show next week turns into, you know, something with AJ where he ends up in the end costing AJ this title. I think that would be a really good way if you want to have Grayson Waller make a big splash on the main roster in a big moment, you know, kind of akin to what Solo did, not obviously as maybe important, but with Drew McIntyre at Clash at the Castle. Just kind of having Grayson in a very big moment of destroying this thing for AJ Styles at Night of Champions. I'm just wondering what you guys think of that possibility and if it can play out that way, or is that maybe a little bit too much in your opinion, or do you think that's the route that they might be going here?
Yeah, and Alex, what was your impression of Grayson in the little bit that you've now seen of him?
Well, I actually went back and watched the deal where he got drafted because I heard you guys raving about it. So I went and watched it. I like the guy. I'm just slightly confused by him and Cameron Grimes because I thought Cameron Grimes was a heel. So I'm like really confused if he's like just all of a sudden a babyface. And I guess it's fine because he hasn't been on TV for forever anyway. But with Waller, I like the idea of having him get on TV and make a big splash right away. I don't necessarily know if I would do it with AJ because of the fact that I'm really hesitant of calling these guys up and beating them. And I think you need to save some equity in AJ right now, because I do think you can get probably a pay-per-view. And then, you know, Wade, you and I have talked about how like 3 or 4 times a year they give us like a big Roman match on SmackDown. I think AJ is like the perfect candidate for that. So I think you need to save some equity in him. So I like the idea to get Waller over and get him a big time opponent right away, but I don't like the idea of having Waller just beat AJ and then you have to worry about that deal later on. Like, if you could get the AJ Reigns thing out of the way faster and then go to that, I would be all for it.
Cool. What do you think of him debuting in a talk show segment instead of a match, Alex?
Based on the personality, I'm totally fine with it. If it seems like the thought process with him is SmackDown's answer to The Miz,
yeah.
Hopefully they frame him slightly better as a worker, so he's not, you know, a joke. But if that's going to be the thought process and his strength is the personality and the mic work, I would rather they do this than what they did with Cameron Grimes tonight. Because, what did that accomplish? Like, if that's what we have to look forward to, only it's a babyface, like, I would much rather have the talking segment with a big name.
Yeah, yeah. All right, Brad, back to you.
No, I don't want to take too much more of your guys' time. It's getting late. I know you got Javier, so I'll let you guys go, but thank you for having me on. And, thanks, Alex. Thanks, Wade. Thanks, guys.
Of course, yeah. Good to hear from you. Thanks. All right, Ryan, we'll throw to you before we get to Javier here. What is on your agenda tonight?
I have a question about Roman Reigns, as he said that no one in WWE in the future will main event both nights of WrestleMania.
Mm-hmm.
Any family stick out that could possibly do that, like, say, Damon Kemp and his brother, or maybe the Von Erichs come in and do that?
No, I don't know. Was it just a family or was it a faction? How broad, do you remember, Alex, how broad his claim was that no one would do it?
I think he mentioned families. I didn't know about a faction.
Yeah.
But
yeah. Cause Dustin's not going to be headlining with one night while Cody headlines another. I'm trying to, the Young Bucks don't have any family. Maybe Nick headlines one and the other. Like, I mean, no, I think he's right. I don't think anyone's going to, I will not be shocked if for the next 100 years, if there's two-night WrestleManias for 100 years, that no other family has two members on one night and another member the other night headline WrestleMania. I mean, this did feel like a bit of an anomaly and a breaking point, to be honest.
Well, and honestly and truly, even if we expand it to factions with what we have right now, that's not going to happen either.
I know. Yeah.
Like, the closest you could get would be an AEW two-night event where Daniel Bryan headlines one night and Moxley headlines the other. Like, that's literally the closest you could possibly get.
All right. What else, Ryan?
I think Montez Ford and Bianca Belair might have a shot at it, too.
That actually is – it's through marriage, but hey. That actually – if you're going to count that, that's probably as close as I can think of a circumstance. And, yeah, I'm glad you threw that out there. Becky and
Cameron
Seth stay by the same. I'll just throw them out there. If we're going to say married couples, Becky and Seth come to mind too then. But I don't think that's what Roman meant. But if that counts, then there's two possibilities.
Okay. Second question is on Cameron Grimes. Has anyone made their debut as sort of like a cruiserweight squashing a super heavyweight? And it's the matter of seconds in WWE, because Vince tends to not like the small guys beating the larger guys that easily.
Yeah, Corbin seems to have shifted Alex into a new chapter of his career, which I don't know that he'll ever be able to win his way out of. Clearly, he's just a utility guy, and he's there to put people over. I mean, unless they I guess they can, give him a big reboot. Cole's like, yeah, his dissension continues or something like that. But they've messed around and played around with him enough, and it just I don't see this as like, well, we're building up to a big reboot. This just seems like this is where he's going to be now. And I mean, it's fine. I don't think there will be too many protests in the streets over this. And Grimes winning quickly over a heel that people take satisfaction in losing is fine. I think the idea is, yeah, we want to show that, you know, they really got into describing him a lot and talking about his traits. They had a lot of prepared lines trying to frame who he is. And, you know, earlier in the night, Cole called Ray the best little man in WWE history. And then with Grimes, they're, you know, characterizing him as, you know, not scrappy like Butch, but still an underdog who will impress you with his perseverance and resilience. I don't know. They got out the thesaurus for it. But I thought it was fine. I didn't think it was, like, super remarkable. It's a fine start. He's going to have really good matches. He's a really good wrestler. But given a win over a bigger wrestler quickly, I don't see a downside to it. Alex?
I just don't think it accomplished much. On the Corbin side, Patrick and I have talked about wrestlers that had a bunch of different gimmicks, but always kept the same name the whole time. And the two that we come up with are Crush and Bradshaw. Baron Corbin has now joined that elite group, and all of the repackages are much closer to Crush than they are to Bradshaw. So that's kind of where Corbin is at this point.
Yeah.
On the Cameron Grimes side, I'm fine with it. I get it. I just don't think this accomplished anything. Like, we didn't learn anything about the guy. He beat somebody that nobody cares about, who wasn't even good enough to get drafted. And it was in, like, 7 seconds. He did one move, and that was, like, I just don't see what that did to accomplish anything. It's not even like he had an old school, like, treat Corbin like a jobber, and we see, like, his five best moves. Like, it wasn't even that. Like, that would have done a little bit more, you know, because it gives, you know, the commentators another, I don't know, minute and a half to talk about the guy. Instead, we got some, you know, tropes and his entrance that was unspectacular, his one move, and then we moved on, and nobody ever said anything about it ever again. Like, it just... For a debut, these 2 weeks just seems like we don't really think much of this guy, but he's better than Baron Corbin, which is not a ringing endorsement.
Yeah, yeah. All right. Anything else for us, Ryan?
Got a question on that triple threat match where Michael Cole said that he's not sure what would happen if, you know, the wrestler submitted while he was in a submission hold by both wrestlers. Is there a precedent on what that rule is, like where you've seen that happen and what they did about it?
I didn't catch that, though. Say that again, right? Sorry.
You know, like in the AJ Styles, Rey Mysterio, Edge match, how Rey was in like a double submission hold. Has that ever happened before?
Yeah.
When the wrestler submits on two holds, and like how did they handle that? Did they just do like an elimination match where he was eliminated and just turned to a singles match?
No, and they kind of avoid part of the triple threat setup is to kind of avoid having extra people have to do jobs, and they don't really do eliminations. Did that spot jump out to you, Alex?
Yeah, I actually think they have done that before, but honestly, I think they pulled the trope of it's like what you talk about all the time, Wade, where the triple threat rules are so stupid. I think they pulled the trope of both of them, you know, there's no finish because you can't have two winners kind of a thing.
Mm-hmm.
But then it's similar but different. There was also the situation where there was a triple threat match where China and Jericho pinned somebody at the same time and they became co-intercontinental champions.
So there
is some precedent to it from that standpoint. But in this particular case, I think they would have waved it off and just had them keep going because triple threat rules are stupid and don't make any sense.
All right, cool. Ryan, appreciate it.
Thanks for taking the call.
Yeah, sure thing. All right, we have a a late number showing up. Looks like a first-time caller. We'll see how this goes. 631, did you intend to push one?
Anyway, there's a kid in middle school.
All right. I think he didn't mean to push one because he's chatting with someone else. So that might have been an accidental accidental pushing of one. But all right, 631, give us a call back if you actually were intending to be on the show. All right, it is time for the very patient. The All-Star Show continues. Javier, the super special All-Star edition of the SmackDown Post Show continues. Welcome.
Hey, Wade. Hey, Alex. How's it going, guys?
Good, good. Thanks for your patience. We had two on-site correspondents and a run-in from Nick and good caller support otherwise. So, what's on your mind? You've been hearing a lot that we've had to talk about.
Well, I can't believe the temerity of Barbati to actually call himself the Reigns when we already established that last week that I'm the Reigns of this outfit. I thought it was a really good show. For people not paying attention to the Zayn thing, the Saudi Arabia government and Syria have reestablished relationships since that ended back in November 2011. So, and the thing is that I think it's always been assumed that it was a choice by Sami Zayn not to go, when it might have been just that he wasn't allowed to go because of his nationality. So, it might explain that. I do think that match could end with them retaining through the Usos, you know, trying to help, and then instead, you know, costing the Reigns the match or getting Reigns disqualified, so the team doesn't have to take a loss. That's one way they could end it, or that if they want to continue expediting the breakup of the bloodline, or they could go the other way where it is they help them win and that helps mend fences between them. So depending on which way they want to go, I could see both ways going for that match.
Alex, what do you think?
Well, what do you think of the thought that we talked about a little bit earlier with Reigns and Solo just, you know, winning one way or the other, and then eventually facing the Usos for the tag titles?
I like that idea because particularly the point you made about letting the other title breathe a bit to let that establish itself more. It all depends on whether they're going that way, because I could also see with Reigns giving the title the death stare as he walked out today. I could see it, you know, be a way to get Reigns and Seth Rollins wrestling, you know, in a sort of title versus title kind of situation. It's going to be kind of, you know, I think we're more meant to believe that. I doubt they're going to, like, do yet another unification so that, you know, what Heyman said of Reigns, you know, carrying three belts. I did go back and watch what Heyman had said because I didn't remember what Heyman had said about what Reigns was going to talk about and whether he, you know, how hard he hit it. But, yeah, he hit it really hard for him to make it seem like he was going to directly – talk about what the new title meant, and I didn't hear him say anything of the sort during the actual, you know, time that he was cutting his promo, where he basically just started talking about how the bloodline main event of WrestleMania and are always going to main event WrestleMania. Then he talked about Solo, then pivoted over to the Usos. I did not hear him. I'll have to like watch it like a third time, but I did not hear him referencing the new title at all outside of, you know, giving it the death stare as he walked up.
I put the show on with closed captions in the background because I was like, I just think I would have remembered hearing that, and I've been paying attention to the show more than that, but I didn't see it come up either on closed caption, And I watched it back a couple times. But like I said, I'm not watching it straight through. But, I mean, if you didn't hear it either, I just think Al's wrong or he's mistaking what Cole said. I did see Reigns briefly sneer at the belt as he did walk to the back. So I did miss that the first time. But he didn't do it on the way out. Heyman did. But on the way back, they showed him just looking at it like, you know, what is this?
Yeah. So, yeah, that's what I got. And I love that segment. I mean, Barbetti already hit a few of the spots there that I really liked. The him talking about the Wild Samoans being the greatest tag team of all time, just to rub salt in the wound. What I find really intriguing is that it seems that if they're going to go the route of a conflict within the bloodline, that this is kind of what we're kind of expecting before Jimmy had his DUI, where it seemed like it was going to be Jimmy who was going to be the next one up for Roman to break down. It kind of seems like, you know, because with him going after Jimmy now, you know, Jimmy being the hothead, and there's a moment when Jay, which also amazing, because when Reigns is getting in Jimmy's face, if you look at Jay looked like he was about to have a heart attack. I mean, he was having a panic attack with what it was his reaction. And Jimmy, when Jay starts apologizing for Jimmy, you can see him tense, Jimmy really tense, like, you know, really trying to control his anger. So great job from all of them. You have Heyman, like, you know, just like, you know, covering his mouth in the background, like, you know, oh my God, I can't believe what's going on. And I'm beginning to wonder, like, how much of that is him pantomiming, you know, like, or him, like, you know, oversight, like, oh, I didn't know this was going to happen, and how much it's like him, like, oh, I can see what's happening, and I'm enjoying the chaos.
Alex, what's your take on Javier's take there?
Yeah, I noticed that too. The interesting part too is when Reigns is in Jimmy's face and Jimmy's like trying to laugh it off, like, oh, you must be joking. The look on Jay's face the entire time is just so despondent, and he's just like, fear is building. It's like, no. Yeah.
Yeah.
And in his head, he's like, I've tried this. This doesn't work.
Finish your thought, Alex. Go ahead. Yeah.
He's just like, I've tried this. It doesn't work. Like, don't be dumb. Just back off. Yeah. Like, just stop. And totally. And he's like ashamed to look at his brother because he knows he's just being stupid. And it's just interesting because in the past we've seen Jay be the one, but in this moment he has to be the bigger brother like Jimmy's been in the past. And that was just like, it shined through the segment. And that was just a really subtle thing that worked.
Well, and not only that, you could hear in Jay's ears Sami Zayn's voice of what Sami Zayn said, you know, about, you know, you just dedicated this to Roman Reigns. What's going to happen when you lose? And you could tell that he is like, holy crap, he was right. He's angry that he was right. I thought this was a really good payoff for what they had been, set before.
You talked about there being a kind of a changing thing that's kind of going back to something that they're originally thinking about. Does this give you a window, Javier, into how you think this all ultimately, like a year from now, is it still the Usos together, but we've had a you know, they're baby faces now. Do Jay and Jimmy take different paths based on what's happening here? Is Jay the one who sees things for what they are and Jimmy doesn't? And how does that in any way change your trajectory? What you imagine the trajectory is for both of them over the course of the next year?
No, I'm pretty sure unless things change, unless there's like, you know, Jimmy does something stupid again or something along those lines, or one of them gets injured, you know, God forbid, assuming, you know, getting, you know, setting all that aside, I think it's most likely, even if they have like a brief stint apart, if this, you know, ends up them splintering a little bit, I think it ends up with them as a tag team, maybe, you know, like most likely the babyface against Reigns and Solo for a bit, but eventually you'll see them back together. I think they're just going to play with the interpersonal dynamics of that group for a while, because I mean, there's still stuff that you can do there. You can, have, Jimmy for a while on the outs, basically doing the Jey Uso, that storyline that started this whole thing, the team on the outs, and then, them back together, maybe, switching from, when they finally turn Reigns face. If they end up doing that, then, them coming to the assistant of Reigns at some point, there's a lot of stuff that they can do, which is, it's cool because it's, there's fertile ground for storyline, for storytelling, for strong storytelling there.
Javier, just start all that over since you stumbled. No, I'm kidding. By the way, Alex, in your SmackDown reporter reader, Peter commented that there's a bit of a backstory to Bianca's overacting from the Green Mist from Asuka. Believe it or not, he says earlier this week, Asuka did an advertisement for super spicy noodles, which is she's done in the past. Asuka mentioned on Twitter that she added a bit of chili to the mist this week and got the idea from eating the super spicy noodles, henceforth Bianca's overreaction. So I guess there was a chili pepper or red pepper flakes or something even more so, cayenne pepper or something in the mist this week, and so maybe they'll acknowledge that on TV. I don't think they did tonight.
Is this AEW? I have to go on Twitter before the wrestling show to find out what they're talking about, what's happening.
Well, we'll see. I don't know if they'll follow up on it. Hopefully, if that is something they're doing on social media, they ought to have mentioned it tonight, but hopefully by next week they do, because it makes Bianca look bad that she's reacting in a way that's so over the top compared to other instances.
It's still dumb. I'm sorry. It's still dumb.
Yeah.
That was like just completely unbelievable in every way possible.
Yeah. Javier, thank you.
I co-signed that. I did not like that segment. I thought that it was. I normally fine with the babyface, assuming the best of the person who's coming out there. But this kind of felt like you could have seen this coming, from a mile away. I thought it really made Bianca Belair look stupid and the overreacting, even if that's, the explanation they give, still the overreacting was, way too much. So, yeah, I was definitely not on board with that whole segment. I agree with I forgot who mentioned that I think it was Nick that said move the title onto somebody else, because I'm about there at the end with Bianca Belair as a champ at this point. I'd like to see it on somebody else.
Yeah.
Well, they have to swap them first, Javier. We haven't done that yet.
or hopefully we just rename them. That way we don't have to deal with this again.
Are they still going to be the wrong colors?
Well, no, I mean, you would rebrand them, make new belts so you could also sell them. So that's, a double win for them. I do want to give a chance for, I do think that this is most likely Seth Rollins title to win. But
yeah,
I could see, to make a case for AJ Styles, which, in story wise, the reason he had left SmackDown originally was in 2020, and was reported by Meltzer that he was unhappy being on SmackDown because he was missing his kids' football games. So that's the reason why he moved to Raw. He has another child who's around the age of his other son. I don't know if he's in sports or anything. So it is a possibility that he ends up winning the title and then moving to Raw. And I'd find it hilarious that if that happens, because then he'll probably take the entire OC with him. And that's like not only just one person that SmackDown's losing, but an entire faction. I doubt it, because more likely that faction's going to be feuding with Reigns in some way, shape, or form. But, I could see that be, they have an out. There is a future if he's the one who wins and takes the title back to Raw.
There's one major problem with that, though. It's May, and football doesn't start till August. So what if he loses the title by then? Doesn't that defeat the purpose?
Well, I'm assuming he won't go back. I mean, that'd be really weird. You'd be on Raw. I mean, they've done weirder. I mean, this whole thing doesn't make any sense. We have the SmackDown Women's Champions on Raw, the Raw Women's Champions on SmackDown. None of this makes sense. You have the Undisputed title, and they're doing a new title, and people from the other brand. None of this makes sense at this point. I don't want it to be like confirmation bias this is all because of Vince McMahon, you know, but I would think that Triple H would be, you know, wouldn't be this chaotic, you know, in particular, like the one that really stood out was the change, you know, what really seems like a change of plans of Roman, you know, not talking about the title during his segment, since that was like essentially what Heyman had said was what he was going to talk about. So, you know, he even called it a preview. Here's a preview of what he's going to talk about, you know.
I still think the telling sign is Bianca getting completely owned in her hometown.
There's that too. What else have you here? I'm just nodding along to your and definitely liking hearing your take on things here.
One note I forgot to mention about the actual Reigns promo. I loved. I think my favorite thing about the whole thing was the callback to the actual Hollywood commercial. With the, you know, do you think the fact that it took a threatening, you know, because when you watch the commercial, it was funny because they're repeating it. But now he takes that you remember as being like, and it was, since it was the best probably of all the commercials, that really funny commercial, and then he just twists it.
Yep.
And that's like, you know, because psychologically, it's like the corruption of something good. And like, so it even hits you, it's even punchier and it hurts more when he starts talking about that. And I thought that, I mean, again, the people involved in this is like, they're definitely like, know what they're doing.
Oh, yes. I honestly, I don't know. I mean, can you, I don't want to overstate, but I mean, that everybody's was so good in that segment. I mean, when Heyman started leaving the ring, like when things got heated, he's like ducking out of the ring, like, oh, things are going to go haywire. I don't want to be in the middle of this, in the background, not drawing too much attention to himself, but the camera's in exactly the right spot to pick it up. And then the camera work was not accidental, or the camera or everyone in the ring knew where the camera would be, and they were playing to it. Like being close to Jimmy hanging his head while Jay is looking at him like, well, you know, you asked for it. How did you not see this coming? And the way, Reigns' facial expressions and the exact distance Reigns stands from Solo and the way he circled the Usos and the cadence that he does it. And then I'm watching it, and I'm imagining him now when he does these segments in movies. Like, this is somebody who's gone so far as a performer. And, you know, obviously he would dial it down for in a movie scene to some degree, but he's not cartoonishly over the top. Like, I don't think somebody in Hollywood's going to look at that and go, it won't work on the big screen. He's too pro wrestling. Like, I just think this was like, regardless of if you like where they went with it, just the performances and the body language and the direction of it and the cadence was so top level.
No, I know this is a total conspiracy theory, but I really am starting to think that he was tanking his babyface run on purpose. You know, because, I mean, it's like night and day. But, yeah.
It is. Yeah. Well, I mean, here, Javier, this is the thing. We put the archive stuff up, and you can – this isn't like to pat me on the back, because so many people were saying this. Roman's going to be a great heel. This is not surprising. Like, the little glimpse of him looking at his watch in NXT, going, you know, whatever the line was, like, acting arrogant. There was that moment of him as a heel briefly in NXT, that clip that went around. And you're like, that's money. This trying to turn him into the new Lex Luger? No. You know, because Lex Luger, or whatever, you know, pick the next John Cena, the next Hulk Hogan. No. It's not who he is, but yes, he's worked at it. I mean, he's worked at it, and he's got a sense of humor now about how badly things went, and some of it was his fault. But he's the man, and this is what we were all rooting for back in the day. And by the way, the Young Bucks, Todd and I talked about it, went back and forth on the fix. The Young Bucks are never going to be Roman Reigns in all likelihood. Like, I mean, like, or I should say never in the vicinity of him. There's no chance they're as good as Reigns, you know, performances. And they'll probably never be in the vicinity of him. But there is, like, sometimes people just need a new direction and get inspired to raise their game from something that it was not working or sort of felt phoned in or was sort of like waving a white flag. This isn't our strength. And I'm like, don't give up. Don't give up. Just keep searching for something. And with Reigns, it was always there. And I still think there's something there with the Bucks that can be much more compelling figures. And they just need to put effort into figuring out what that is and trying a few more things and not just leaning on having good matches. Because you watch Roman in this turnaround, and again, no one's going to match the turnaround, but he's so good right now. And it was, you know, it wasn't that many years ago that this was a disaster. And our flashback shows are covering some of those right now.
And I did want to bring something on up on Cameron Grimes. I hate my memory because I don't trust it. So check with one of the NXT guys to confirm this. But I remember it wasn't his first match because his first match was part of that up and comer tournament. I forgot what they called it on NXT. I think it was still being called Trevor Lee there. But as Cameron Grimes, I believe one of his first feuds actually started that way, where it was someone who was talking trash to him a lot, and then he just walked into the ring and hit him with the stomp thing and immediately beat him. So I personally enjoyed how he did that to Corbin, because for me it was a callback to that, if I remember correctly. My brother also remembers it that way, so, you know, double check. But double check anyway. But, yeah, so mm-hmm. I thought that was a neat callback, the fact that you know, Corbin, who's a blowhard, you know, jackass, just getting, you know, one-shotted because, you know, he's Corbin. I personally liked it, so.
Yeah, yeah. Anything else, Javier?
I believe that would be it. Well, you guys mentioned, I do have one last note from one last thing that you guys mentioned about the first match. What my impression of the first match is, it felt like the three of them wanted to have a lot of like neat spots together, and I think they just their reach was longer than their grasp, I think, because there were a couple like really cool like you know spots that they did where the double spear to the outside that looked cool, but there were also a couple of others like that 619 thing looked horrible in the end. I think they tried to get too cute and do too much, because I think they were like really excited for all three of them being in the ring at the same time. And, you know, considering that their age, this might literally be the last time that you're going to see these people in a certain, you know, together. And I think they're like, oh, let's do everything we could possibly dream of in this one match. Mm-hmm. And I think it was way too much.
Yeah, I mean, if they've earned not taking a ton of flack for what happened, you know, because I don't want to – because, I mean, obviously, if there were some, like, green wrestlers in NXT or, you know, a triple threat AEW women's match and those spots, you know, like, those spots happened, we'd be all over it. And, you know, deservedly so, and we're calling them out for it. But, you know, they've earned through stellar work, a body of work. They've earned a botch here and there or an overambitious spot here and there, and I do think you're right. I don't want to say just stick to the basics, because you want more than that, but this, I don't even know how you design that the double 619 spot and don't think, wait a second, this is going to be cheesy. And not even if, even if they pulled it off smoothly, it's just, you know, it's like, even then it would be cheesy and then to get it wrong, you know, but I mean but the spear spot to the floor. I mean, nobody should be taking that in their 20s, much less their 40s. Man, I mean, the stunt landing ability of those guys to absorb that on a mat on a cement floor still just blows my mind. I mean, I don't know if admire is the word. I'm in awe of their human bodies being able to handle that when I know I could not begin to handle that anything close to it.
I'm just happy I stepped down a curb and don't sprain my ankle. So
exactly, that's what I mean. Yeah, exactly. Yep.
Yeah, so that's pretty much all I had. So,
all right, cool. Well, we've had a mega long show, but glad you joined us, Javier.
Good night, guys.
Alex, any closing words for you? Anything else we didn't cover in your notes or that you want to bring up?
No, not at all, actually.
Yeah. Yeah, it was fun. Fun show.
Yeah, good stuff. You know what, though? One thing we didn't talk about.
Yeah.
The NFL schedule got released yesterday.
Uh-oh.
And did you happen to see the week one matchup?
No. What is it? Is it Vikings Bucks?
It is.
Fun. In Minnesota?
Yep.
Are you coming?
Not a chance.
Why not?
Because I live in Florida?
It's beautiful here in September. Like, it's gorgeous in September. All right. Actually, it's gorgeous here in August, and then September takes, like, it's like, drops, like, 60 degrees instantly after Labor Day.
Yeah, no thank you. Too cold.
Yeah. No, the NFL's best. Well, I should say best experience. I had my years going, waking up every Sunday morning going for season tickets and got to see Randy Moss in his prime for years and Robert Smith and Chris Carter and all that. But I'm 4K TVs, commentary, hitting the rewind button, pushing pause. It's, and being older, I don't need to go to games. I mean, I want to go to games, but the NFL experience is a lot of fun on TV. So, cool. Well, we'll talk about the game as it approaches, I'm sure.
No predictions in May.
No. I don't think about the Vikings until like mid to late August. I saw on the news today there's like rookie camp and there was like, you know, passes, and I'm like, my God, it's May. I don't want to think about it. Football yet. The NBA and NHL playoffs haven't even finished. I always talk about Kirk Cousins and quarterback stuff, and I can't avoid the headlines. But yeah, I start thinking about the Vikings in September, and that's the type of fan I am. I know I have no problem with people who love the NFL draft and are thinking about everything. You know, I think about wrestling constantly. So, cool. Thanks, Alex. Always a blast. Everyone, check out his report at pwtorch.com. Tons of analysis and details on the show. You should be checking that out. He does a fantastic job. With a strong point of view, backs it up with really good analysis, a well-written report. Make it a destination on Fridays when you're watching SmackDown or right afterwards. Alex, thanks again, and we will talk to you soon.
Thanks, Wade. Have a good one.
Yep, you bet.